Mary had been to the tomb already that morning. She had come early, and finding the stone rolled away, she decided, simply seeing that, that the body had been taken. She ran to Peter and the other disciple, the one whom Jesus loved, and brought them back. They looked in the tomb, and there were the grave clothes, and there was the cloth covering the face rolled up to one side. And then they left, leaving Mary Magdalene by herself once again. Finally, she looked in the tomb, and there are two messengers of God there. That's what angel means, messenger. She's weeping, and they ask what seems to them an obvious question, but to her, it must have seemed like an insane question. Woman, why are you weeping? Well, she had seen this man she loved, this man she followed, this man to whom she had devoted her life, who had cured her of seven demons. She had seen him executed. She had seen him placed in a tomb, and now the body was gone. Why wouldn't she be weeping? She turns away from them, and there's a solitary figure there. She assumes it's the gardener, because who else would you find in a garden where there's a tomb but the caretaker of the garden? He says, "Woman, why are you weeping?" Again, why are you weeping? "Whom do you seek?" She said, "I'm looking for my Lord. If you've taken him, tell me where he is. I'll go find him and bring him back." And this solitary figure, whom she thinks is the gardener, says one word, "Mary," and in that one word is her whole life story. It's the voice of Jesus, the one who received her when she had seven demons, whatever that means, the one who cured her of those seven demons, who invited her, a woman, to be among his closest disciples, to travel with him, to learn everything he had to teach. In that one word was her whole life story. And she says one word in return, "Rabboni," which does mean teacher, but it's the affectionate, intimate term for teacher. She must have tried to approach, because Jesus says, "Don't hold on to me. I've not yet ascended to God, but go and tell the others. Tell all of those who disappeared at the crucifixion. Tell those who came and then left you all alone in the garden. You go and tell them." She goes back with one message, the first preacher of the gospel, the first Christian preacher, a woman, Mary Magdalene, goes back to those who had been in hiding and says, "I have seen the Lord." That's her message. That's it. She can't explain it. She doesn't know how it happened. She doesn't even know what's happening. All she knows is that one truth: "I have seen the Lord." Now, on Easter, we say again and again, "Christ is risen, Christ is risen indeed." And sometimes we say it so often that I wonder if it has any content. It made a big difference for Mary. So what difference does it make for you? "I have seen the Lord." In preparing for this sermon, I had been thinking about another story, and yet this one story kept insisting on being told. And when a story insists on being told, you pay attention. And if it insists long enough, you don't refuse. So here it is. There was a great rabbi. He was called the Baal Shem Tov, the keeper of the good name, someone who knows the secret name of God. He had taught many, 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 many disciples, many students during his time, but now he was in his great old age. He could see that sometime soon he would be crossing that threshold between this world and the next world. And so he began to call his disciples back, and he began to divest himself of everything he owned. To one, he would give his Torah, to another his Talmud, to another his prayer shawl, until he had given away everything he owned to one or another of the disciples, except one. There was one particular student who paid careful attention to every story, who in fact could retell every story that his rabbi had ever told. He was the one who was left out. He went to the Baal Shem Tov and said, I think you've forgotten something or someone. His rabbi said, who have I forgotten? He said, I think you've forgotten me. Forgotten you, he said. No, I've been giving you my best all along. You've been listening to these stories. You've been remembering them. You've been telling them. And wherever you go in all the world, people will welcome you. They'll give you food and clothing and housing just to hear these stories for the rest of your life. And sure enough, after the death of his rabbi, he began to travel the world. He began to tell those stories he had heard sitting at the feet of the Baal Shem Tov. And sure enough, people welcomed him. They gave him food and clothing and shelter. This went on for many years until finally, when he got up in the morning, his knees were stiff. And if he walked any different, his hips hurt. And he thought, I'm not going to be able to continue traveling the rest of my life. At some point, I'm going to have to stop. And who will care for me then? What will I do then? While he was pondering this, he got word that there was a particular very wealthy noble who had offered a bag of gold to anyone who could tell him a story of the Baal Shem Tov, of the storyteller's rabbi, that the noble hadn't heard before. Well, the storyteller thought, who better than I to do this? I remember all the stories that my rabbi told. I will just keep telling story after story after story until I hit upon one that he hasn't heard. I'll get the bag of gold. That will be my retirement. So he made his way to the gate of the estate of the noble. The servant ushered him in, and when the noble saw the storyteller, you would have thought he was seeing a long-lost friend. Welcome, he said. Come in. Rest a while. We'll have dinner. Then we'll sit by the fire, and you can tell me stories. Well, sure enough, that's exactly what they did. The storyteller rested a while, had a sumptuous dinner. They sat by the fire, and the noble said, all right, now start. Let's hear some stories. But something had happened with the storyteller that had never happened before in his life. His mind was a complete blank. He could not remember a single story of the hundreds upon hundreds of stories he knew. He said, I'm sorry. He said, I know all of these stories. I remember all the stories my rabbi told, but I can't think of a single one this evening. The noble said, that's okay. You're just tired. Go, get a good night's sleep, rest tomorrow. Enjoy the hospitality of the estate, and tomorrow night we'll come back and you can tell the stories then. So that's exactly what he did. He got a good night's sleep, enjoyed the hospitality of the estate, again had wonderful meals. That second evening he came and sat by the fire, and still not one story would come. He said, I'm so sorry. You're going to think I'm a fraud. You're going to think that I'm someone who's just trying to get your money, and I don't really know the stories, but I do. I just can't seem to remember them now. The noble said, oh, no. I don't think that at all. You're still a bit tired. Just rest another day. So he rested another day, and on the third evening when he came to sit by the fire, the storyteller had his bag with him. He said, I'm going to have to leave. I've imposed upon your hospitality and your kindness much too long. I've eaten your meals, I've enjoyed your estate, and I still can't remember a single story, so I have to go. And as the storyteller reached down to grab the handle of his bag, the noble said, No, you have to stay. Think of anything. I don't care what it is. Anything you remember, just sit there and tell me something. The storyteller was a bit shocked by the vehemence of the noble's response. He said, well, you know, I did think of something. It's not really even a story. It's just something that happened one time. Tell it, said the noble. Well, said the storyteller, it was my rabbi's custom when he traveled to take one of his students with him. And on this one occasion, he took me along. We went to a village, and I didn't know before we got there that in this particular village, we were arriving during what the Christians call Holy Week. We were arriving on the day they called Good Friday, and it was the custom of this particular village to crucify a Jew in repayment for the Jew who was crucified that the Christians worship. I thought, what in the world are we doing here? Sure enough, when we walked down the middle of the street, no one was in the Jewish section. No one was out in the street. Finally, a door opened and somebody shouted, "Get in here! What are you, crazy?" So we went inside the house. And those who'd gathered there said, "Don't you know what they do here? Every year the archbishop comes by, and every year they pick a Jew to crucify in repayment for the Jew that they worship who was crucified. And if you're in the street, guess who they're going to pick?" Whew. I thought we barely missed it. We barely escaped. And then we heard the sound of the wheels of a cart moving along the pavement stones. We cracked the shutters. And sure enough, there was a cart. There was a tall man in long, beautiful, colorful robes with a pointed hat, surrounded by other men in black robes, and on the back of the cart was a cross. "See," our host said, "see what we told you? There's the archbishop." We looked on with terror and amazement until my rabbi tapped me on the shoulder and said, "See the tall man in the hat out there? Go tell him I want to speak to him." Me? What? If I go out there, I'll be the one that winds up on that. But I had never refused to do anything my rabbi told me. So I opened the door. I very quickly ran to the cart. I didn't even look at the man. I simply said, "My rabbi, the Baal Shem Tov, wishes to speak to you." But you know, all he did was to step down from the cart and walk into the house. He and my rabbi went into a back room. They talked for a while. He came out. We watched as he spoke to the men in black robes. They all dispersed, and from what I'm told, there was no Jew crucified that year or any year after that. You see, it's not really even a story. It's just something that happened to me a long time ago. And he looked up, and the noble was weeping. He said, "Man, why are you weeping?" He said, "You don't recognize me, do you?" He said, "No, why should I?" He said, "I was the man in the tall hat. I was born a Jew. I was very bright. I converted. I rose quickly through the ranks of the church to archbishop. I was sent to this one village where it was the custom on Good Friday to crucify a Jew. And I knew it was wrong, and I didn't stop it. Until the day that you came out and called me in. And I went into the back room with your rabbi. He looked at me and he said, 'Man, what are you doing? For God's sake, what are you doing? You must stop this.' And I knew I must. I knew I had to stop this awful, awful practice. And I resolved that I would, but I thought, I'll never be forgiven for this. I looked at him and I said, 'I will stop it. I will put an end to this, but how will I ever be forgiven for what I've done? I knew it was wrong, and I did it anyway.' And he looked at me with these piercing brown eyes, and he said, 'God can forgive anything.' I said, 'Not this. Not this. I knew what I was doing. I knew that it was wrong. I did it anyway. I was afraid.' Again, he locked in on my eyes, and he said, 'God can forgive anything.' And I said, 'How will I know? How will I ever know that I've been forgiven? How will I gain that assurance?' And your rabbi told me, 'One day someone will come and tell you your own story. On that day, you will know that forgiveness has come to your house.' And today you've done that very thing. You have come and you have told the story that brought forgiveness to this house finally. And it is a gift worth far more than any bag of gold or world of gold." When Jesus said, "Mary," He told her whole life story in a word, all that they had experienced together, all that they had done, and forgiveness came to her house. I believe that God was in Christ coming into the world to tell us our story, to tell us our story in such a way that forgiveness can come to our houses as well. And then we are called to go forth and tell others their story in such a way that they can know the grace and the mercy and the peace and the love and the forgiveness of God. Because you see, when someone comes and tells you your own story, forgiveness has not simply come to visit, but has come to live at our house. Thanks be to God.